Thank you. Welcome. Last time I was scheduled, I actually was so mindful I forgot about showing up. So I'm already ahead of the game now. I wanted to open it up. There was a few things that I thought about speaking about tonight, but I thought I'd open up and kind of ask if there's anything that you might have that you would like addressed as far as practice.
I'm not sure this is about practice, but I'm really interested in spirituality related to martial arts practice.
Okay, that's interesting. Spirituality related to martial arts. Well, the practice that I did, and I haven't done it in a while, is Aikido. And Aikido is based on the premise of that if you have the ability to kill somebody or to hurt them, that really wasn't the highest form of victory. Really, the highest form of victory was the resolution of conflict. And uniting, bringing people together, or using methods that create the opportunity to resolve conflicts. And we use it, one of the ways that I do use it a lot is that in the mindfulness classes, we do a night of Aikido, where we turn our stresses into physical form. And what we find is that if we act out, have somebody act out the stress and you become that stress in the form of an energy coming at them, that what they will do is react in some way. They will react either pushing back, which is usually the first reaction, or running away. And what we find that they've created without even mentioning it is the primal fight or flight reaction that we have, that we use so much. We basically, most of us unconsciously are so well trained in that, that we use that as our method of dealing with things. And in that physiology, we'll call it, it is a physiology, that there's really only two choices. We're in the oldest part of the brain, and that part of the brain can only react in some sort of defensive way that is sometimes aggressively defensive, and sometimes it is withdrawing type of defense. They're both defenses. Where there's another pathway, and that other pathway is one of that we use in our mindfulness practice, one of embracing, one of being with, one of joining. And so the being able to choose that pathway is really a big part of what the training is really about. It's not about becoming stronger or beating somebody or whatever. It's really learning about yourself and your own responsiveness to life. And you do it in a physical form that really teaches you about energies. It teaches you that we can struggle against energies, we can push against things, and we can get very tired and worn, but yet think that we're doing a lot. We must be doing something for ourselves. We must be doing something to accomplish something good in our lives, because that's really our intention, is to accomplish something good. But yet when we really look at it, when we really examine it, we're really very inefficient, and a lot of times we're struggling unnecessarily and we're pushing in the wrong directions. So it's very similar to what happens in sitting, where you are something going on in your mind and you start to struggle with it. You start to try to control it. You start to manipulate it in some sort of way. And at some point, something kind of aha, you get an insight, or doing it long enough, you realize the futility of it, and you just embrace it. You just be with it, and all of a sudden there's a different response to that that you feel in your body, and you feel it in your mind, and it's that letting go that we hopefully get to, and cultivate some sort of wisdom. So the couple points to that that we can look at is that a lot of times we take the struggling that we do, or we take the inappropriate behaviors that we have, and we judge them in the old-fashioned way. And what we might start to recognize is that that is, even in the struggle, there's some awareness beginning to percolate. There's something that we're learning. And so no moment is a throwaway moment in the learning process, because all the struggling that we might be doing in our heads or physically or with some sort of life problem is really, we can start to, the first place that's easiest to change our relationship is we can start to see that as some value. That there is a place in us that is watching that even when we feel we're lost. And I think the real blessing of mindfulness is that you can truly be 99% lost, and that 1% is enough to transform. And many times when I find myself very lost, that's the place that I have faith, is I know that at least 1% of me is watching what's going on. And at some point, that will be enough information to stop and to make a choice, or for somehow to transform and start to go down another path. But it happens because of all that struggle that we didn't know about. I think watching yourself learn is one of the most fascinating things that we can do with our awareness, is watch yourself learn. I actually just came from a drum lesson, and I took up drums very late in life. And I'm really having fun with it. And my drum teacher is in a band, and he likes very fast rock and roll. And so he was training me how to, you know, you get tired of doing the right hand, it's called the hi-hat. You get tired, you know, in a really fast song. So he was teaching me a way to do half of it with one hand and half of it with the other. And it's very complicated. You just don't have, you know, you can't think about it. You just have to have it wired. And so I was doing it, and I was fumbling around and not able to do it. And I was very busy the following week. And a week later, I sat down in the drums without practicing at all, and it was there. And it was, where did that come from? You know, I wasn't practicing it. I wasn't thinking about it. But there was something going on. I mean, this brain of ours is so amazing. And the learning process so fascinating. So many times, it just like this light went off. My God, even though I wasn't practicing, there was some part of me that must have been processing that. And then once it's wired, it's wired. And now I can, without thinking about it, go back. Because really, when you're doing things like music or many things that we do in our lives, you can't think of it fast enough. It has to be there in our wiring, in our repertoire. So watching yourself learn and trusting those places where we don't have it. It's not wired. Whether it's heartfulness, whether it's dealing with, developing the qualities that we want to develop through our meditation, whether it's generosity, whether all these things are the foundations to our practice, that it can be very helpful to understand that there's so many different levels that we are learning and growing. Many times it's through watching ourselves tighten and not expressing what we want to express in our lives, and watching that enough where at some point it just goes and it transforms, and we start finding ourselves seemingly miraculously going down another pathway. But it's not miraculous. It's the law of karma, which is explained to be cause and effect. If you practice the causes of happiness, you will tend to be more happy. There are certain things that tend to lead to greater happiness. And if you practice them, you will tend to have the outcome of that practice. And there's certain things that lead to greater suffering, and if you practice them consciously or unconsciously, you will tend to have more suffering. So the wisdom that we develop, the insight that we develop, is really because we're somehow practicing the things that lead us to greater insight. And I think a real important part of this practice is to start to realize how many directions we are getting input that is leading us to make new choices and to go down new pathways and to get the happiness and the richness that we want in our lives and to develop those qualities that ultimately make us feel full. And in a way, it's the internal martial art. Anything else?
Question. Do you practice the form of books of meditation? I like to read the books. Some people advise different kinds of things. I was wondering if in your practice, if starting out with meditation where the mind is pretty unsettled and very busy, is it better just to do the short street, you know? So I've read over and over again that it's better to do regular occasions, not, you know, not miss a day. But, you know, I've heard minutes as small as 10 minutes.
Okay. At some level, it's never stopping meditation. And let's look at the first part of your question. You talked about reading, that you read a lot, and you've done that more than sitting. But let's look at reading, because that's a very powerful thing that we can learn about awareness. Now, everybody knows that we've experienced that we've been reading something, and all of a sudden our mind goes off somewhere. Whether it was a word that we're reading or just a thought popped in our head and we checked out. And our eyes kept on going down the page. Our hands might even turn pages. And all of a sudden we wake up and realize, I don't know a darn thing on that page. Now, if you really think about that, that's a real lesson in mindfulness. Because if you look physically what's happening, the light, when you're reading, the light is reflected off this page. It has symbols on it that are reflected into your eye that hit, are focused onto the receptors in the eye, and they go through a few pathways, and there's something happens inside if the mind is focused on that experience. So for you to be reading, your mind had to be focused on that experience. And you can contrast that to when your mind went off and the same light was coming from the page to your eyes and hitting those receptors. But then there wasn't this faculty of awareness that was connected to that experience. So you weren't really reading, even though your eyes are going through the exercise. Okay? In a way, that's the same thing that's happening with the physical sensations in our body, with sounds, with all our senses. Is, do we have awareness connecting that? I call it completing the circuit of that experience. Now, when you're reading and you're connected, you're getting information. You might be getting images and stories and hearing sounds out of it and smelling things out of those symbols. And there's a real deep experience that can go on there. You can find yourself laughing, the humor, crying at the sorrow. So this is what happened when you're connected to that experience. When you're off somewhere else, there's nothing happening. Same thing in life. So meditation is the formal practice of sitting and the informal practice. Taking a shower. You can be in a shower. I love the image of a shower because it's a wonderful experience, and it's a miracle if you think about it, that we could turn on this knob and have hot water coming out. And through the history of mankind, through all the evolutionary process, we're the lucky ones that get to do this in the last few years. To get clean was an incredibly challenging thing for all the beings that preceded us. And yet we go into this amazing situation and we start having, you know, problems that come, you know, we start arguing with people and worrying about what might happen and what happened yesterday, and start bringing all these people in and having a business meeting and trying to work out these grand difficulties that we have in our lives, and we don't feel water. And we don't notice that there's soap touching us. And we don't notice that we're actually touching our own bodies. And that, to me, is the heart of meditation. So bringing yourself to those experiences with awareness is the practice. And in some way, I feel that the whole purpose of sitting in the formal practice, like we just did for a half hour, is so that we can more deeply focus on those experiences that we have all day long. And when you look at it that way, maybe it might encourage you to want to practice so that you can have a deeper life experience. And out of that motivation, you'll find that you don't have to worry about, well, do I practice 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 30 minutes? It's, gee, I want to practice, you know, because I want that deeper connection with life. And the practice just happens. So then let's talk about some of the elements of practice. Again, looking at this wonderful mind of ours, that if you think of that, we have, call it molecules of awareness, that we find that our unconscious habit is to diffuse this awareness. That we diffuse it, if you think about it, in time and space. So in time, a lot of our attention is focused on the past, things that already happened, things that we're rehashing over and over and over again. If you think that if something happens and then you rehash it once, that might be enough. But certainly after the few hundred thousandth time, it's definitely should be enough. And yet we do that over and over, many things. And then the craziest thing of all is that we spend all this energy focusing on the future, which is the grand hallucination. I mean, whatever you think about tomorrow, I can guarantee you it's going to be different than you're thinking. And certainly if you're projecting further and further to the rest of your life, which you don't even know what that might be, that if you really look at it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put that much attention on that, to waste and diffuse that attention that we have. And how little of it is really in the present moment, kind of where the tire meets the road. And so that's one of the first elements of the practice, is can we focus our attention into what's really relevant in our experience, which is simply just the experience that's arising right now. And if you really practice that, you will find that it takes your full attention to attend to this moment. There's enough here that requires attention, that would benefit from attention. Certainly your body, as you're sitting here right now, really is many times starving for attention. Just like I think of kids who, you know, jumping in the swimming pool. It's really not official till someone they love experiences that, stops what they're doing and watches that grand splash that's the must be the best splash in the whole world. Or that cartwheel. It's the most magnificent cartwheel. And we have that in ourselves continually, that we want to be witnessed. And the most important consciousness to do that is your own. That what's going on in your belly right now, if you can, in a way, see your belly as wanting attention, wanting to be known and wanting to be connected with. And so concentrating our attention at the present moment and on our own experience is kind of the, I guess, core element of practice. And because we have become so good at spreading out our attention all over the place in time and space away from ourselves, that it requires us, in a way, to practice consciously for some period of time, bringing that attention into that one point in nature. And that's what we do when we sit, is we have the opportunity to practice kind of calling the, you know, it's like herding cats sometimes, but it's bringing that attention in to this moment and into ourselves and into our own experience, and watching ourselves do cartwheels or do whatever it is that we're doing. And so what we do, just like in drumming, the experience of drumming, is that we will become good at whatever we practice, whether we're practicing it consciously or unconsciously. We're going to get good at it. And so if we're practicing bringing our attention into more one-pointed focus, we will get better at that over time. And the things that will enlighten us about that are that maybe sometimes the 1% when we're 99% lost, and when everything's kind of exploding and chaos seems to be happening, that 1% will call us home. And that's a pretty comforting thought, that that's all it really takes. And particularly recognizing that, that we do always at least have that 1%. Any other? Yes?
Just a question. Thinking about if concentrating on the moment, in the present, and not trying to worry about them, future. And for experience, person who meditates a lot, and this is part of, continuous part of your life, where are, this might be a great question, but where are the visions, where are the planning and everything else, for the future quality in the life? How much importance a person should be there?
Yeah.
It's sometimes very difficult. I mean, during the practice, my some of the life, discipline himself on itself, concentrate on the moment, and that good experience of that. But then again, using this for a period of time that everybody practices for there.
Okay. So the question is, in essence, let me make sure I'm getting this right, where does planning come in? And I think that's a very good question. If we recognize planning is a very good thing to do, and being in the moment doesn't mean that you don't plan. But as you're planning, you know that you're planning in the moment. And you know that what you're doing is you're organizing a strategy, but it's not actually doing something. Okay? Because as you're organizing this strategy, that as you, if you stay in the moment, as you come up to the actual experience and unfolding of that, that you might find that it's appropriate to do something a little bit different. All right. So if we're going to build a rocket ship to go to the moon, we would benefit very much by planning it out, planning out how to build the rocket ship, learning about, you know, propulsion and guidance and all the other things that we would have to do. But each place that you're doing that is in the present moment. So planning is something that actually is happening in the present moment. That's different than being in the rocket ship and flying. Planning is planning and flying is flying. So you just know that it's knowing that I'm planning, I'm organizing, and I'm looking at how to structure and organize things. Does that make sense?
Sure. It's the role of imagination. Because if I'm present and I think about future, that's part of imagining. It is not in the moment. Then I'm taking my attention and my focus away from the moment and looking at the future.
Well, no, I think you can do that consciously. I think that you can know that you're looking at the future and you're looking at possibilities and you're letting your mind kind of, you know, go off and seek. I really, my experience of doing that, I don't know any of the writings, I'm not speaking as a Buddhist scholar or anything, but in my laboratory of experience and teaching in the settings that I teach, I find that is something that I consider happening in the present moment and that I really let myself do consciously. I enjoy doing that. You know, I just invented a device and it's coming to the market, and I spent a lot of time just letting myself kind of imagine different ways that I could create it. But I was doing it consciously. And the other thing that I made sure I do is I wanted to have the part of my being that's most active for that. And actually, as the physiology of our brain works, is that being peaceful and calm is the best way to do that. It's the best physiology to be creative. That's why a lot of the discoveries that have been come out of science have come out of people letting go and going to the beach and relaxing, you know, working on something and then letting it go. And when they're not thinking of it, all of a sudden this idea pops in their head. Well, cause and effect, the idea popped in the head because they allowed themselves to relax enough to get in the physiology where that part of their brain is most active. So if you really want to do more in a way, focus on becoming more peaceful. And that's where the practice that we do comes in. And taking time to just breathe and do nothing is a very powerful thing to get things accomplished, because that brings you to that more peaceful place where things flow more easily. Anything else?
Could you say something about noticing the moment of choice?
I certainly, when you say noticing the moment of choice, noticing when you come up to that pathway, okay. One of the faculties, one of the qualities that leads us to be able to make choice is to be present, to be in the present moment. And one of the examples that I always use a lot of that is that driving a car, you're on the freeway and just like reading, your mind goes off somewhere and God knows who's driving the car, but somehow there's part of you that still maintains control of the car. But you go past your exit. And you didn't have a choice of going off that exit because you weren't present enough to actually see the exit and know that you wanted to go there and to actually make the turn and do it. So the first thing about choice is the element of being present, of knowing where you are. And as you come up to a situation, being non-reactive enough to to be able to look at the various pathways that you have. Most of the time, if we're in the reactive state that we operate so much in, we don't have a lot of choice. The extreme of that is when you're furiously angry and all of a sudden you find yourself trying to put your fist through a wall. And you wouldn't do that logically, but in that rage, that is a possible expression without choice. So some element of peacefulness, I think, is really necessary to make choice, to have vision, to see that I go off, you know, if I doing the same mistake or doing the same reactive response to something and not recognizing that there's another possibility that you could do that actually would be more kind, more effective, and less stressful. So that element of presence, an element of peace, and many times it's through that being lost for 99% lost, but having that 1%, and at some point recognizing that there is this other pathway, and I want to take it. There's a wonderful poem that we use by Portia Nelson called Autobiography in Five Short Chapters. And I think I can remember it. I walk down the street. There is a hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I don't know where I am. It takes forever to find my way out. It's not my fault that I'm here. It's chapter one. Chapter two, I walk down the same street. There's a hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm forgetting the second part here, but I'll go into the third part. It takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3, I walk down the same street. There's a hole in this deep hole in the sidewalk. I see that it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. Chapter 4, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5, I walk down a different street. Okay. And what this is levels of awareness as we practice. And the first chapter is total oblivion. And actually there's a research paper that came out a couple years ago that truly clueless people really are clueless. It kind of proved it. They're clueless. You know, they'll fall in a hole and they don't know, how did this happen to me? Right? They'll take no responsibility. They won't see anything. Chapter 3 is the most painful place of awareness. It's when you know that you want to be a different way. You know that you want to have more heartfulness, or you know you want to be more generous, or you know you want to be more peaceful in your life, and you can taste it, you can smell it, but there's something in that pull, the habit that you can't overcome yet, and you find yourself, whether it's I want to have a better diet, and you find yourself eating the ice cream or whatever, and as you're doing it, there's part of you that is really raging against yourself. It can be a very painful place, but if you appreciate that there's enough awareness there at that point, and that's why it's like that, and that's what's building to chapter 4 or 5, that you have the ability to walk around the hole, or that you just say, no, I'm not going there. I know what's down there, and I'm going over here. And so that's levels of awareness. And it's like all the chapters there are part of the process of healing. That there's no throwaway chapter there. Okay. So I think we'll go now, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight with you. And I'm just going to pat myself on the shoulder for remembering and actually showing up. I'll leave you with one thing, though. in research that the things that we're practicing here really do, they show that they do make a difference. Anger, hostility is literally tearing our blood vessels, the lining of our heart vessels apart and creating disease in so many different ways. And peace, and particularly appreciation, is the most powerful mental attribute for good health. So if you can do one thing and just practice and get stronger and stronger appreciating what you already have, instead of seeking new things continually, which is, I'm not saying that's not a bad thing, but we have so much to practice appreciation with. So if you can do that, it's truly the most health-inducing characteristic that you can cultivate. So I appreciate being here and being with you.